and convention. And I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago. And I had such a beautiful time. I was amazed at the effort you all put in. And I just walked around all weekend thinking, this is an incredible convention. I've been to many of them at that point. So I can see you're putting the same effort into the into this Zoom event. And it's just wonderful. Now, I want to start out by saying that for me as a speaker in this spiritual program, what I pray before I speak is that there's one person I can help, that one person will identify with the story I'm telling, and that it will give them hope, because that's what I think speakers really do, is hopefully the speaker will fill a person with hope and they think, I can do this. Because we have to go into this believing we can do this, that this is a program in which we can find recovery, and to really believe it. It is a spiritual program. I want to start out reading a set-aside prayer. And this is something that is not in the big book, but I think it's a wonderful prayer. It's used throughout 12-step fellowships routinely. And the idea is that you may know an awful lot about 12-step programs and about Overeaters Anonymous, but when you go to something like this weekend, you want to open your mind and open your heart so new information can come in. We're all learning. I certainly learn every meeting I go to, every speaker I hear. So I'm going to read this little set-aside prayer to just give us all the idea that we should be open. God, please set aside everything I think I know about myself, my brokenness, my spiritual path, and you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my brokenness, my spiritual path, and especially you. The other thing I want to read, the other prayer, is a prayer written by somebody in AA who happened to be a Catholic priest. Now, I'm Jewish, and I will tell that in my story, but this is a Catholic priest who was recovered in AA, and he wrote a beautiful short prayer, and I say it often, and the people I sponsor, I give it to, because it just makes you feel dependent on your higher power, which is what we're trying to do in this program. Lord, take me where you want me to go. Let me meet who you want me to meet. Tell me what you want me to say and keep me out of your way. And that's the whole prayer. And this Catholic priest named Michael Judge used to put this prayer on a little index card, a little business card, and hand it out in New York City. And he was known for this beautiful prayer. And his assignment as Catholic priest was to be the priest for a firehouse in New York City. And that was the firehouse across from the World Trade Center. And Michael Judge was one of the first people killed in the attacks on the towers in 9/11. They call him today the saint of 9/11. And his prayer means so much to me. Because it tells us, God, lead me. Take me wherever you want me to go. Let me meet whoever you want me to meet. Tell me what you want me to say and keep me out of your way. So to me, that's the attitude that I'm trying to get in my recovery. I'm a hard-charging person by personality. And the last thing I would do is say to anybody, lead me, take me, guide me. But that's what I'm trying to do with my higher power. I'm trying to step back and relax. It tells us in the big book in step 11, we relax, we take it easy. We're all trying to relax when you think about it. We're trying to relax and go for the ride. And that's what we're working at in this program. We're working to become new people. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about my background so that you'll better understand my recovery. I started out with my very first OA meeting when I was 32 years old. This is back in the 1970s. I'm almost 76 now. But I was 32 years old, and one of my children, now I've been married 52 years, and I have three children and seven grandchildren and a great-granddaughter and another great-grandson on the way. So that's my family situation. But when I was 32 years old, one of my children was in a preschool. And, you know, you get to know the other mothers in the preschool. And one of the mothers one day, who I didn't know very well, said to me she wanted to go to something called Overeaters Anonymous. And would I come along with her just to keep her company? Now, at that time, I was pretty normal weight. And I had just lost, again, I lost a lot of weight. You know, my problem has always been maintaining. And I had lost a lot of weight, and I knew that I was going to put it back on. I could tell just by my behavior. And I thought, you know, I better go along with her and see what this is about. And I went along really for her sake. So she picked me up one evening and drove me to a church. Now, me being Jewish, I haven't been in many churches in my life. This was a little Catholic church. And we went down into the basement of the church. Now, she herself was Christian. We went down into the basement, and there was a small OA group. It was all new to me. I had no idea what Overeaters Anonymous was about. I didn't know if it was religious or spiritual or was a diet club. I had no idea. I was going along to help her, really. Maybe help myself in the process. Well, these people were so loving and friendly. They didn't know us at all. And they hugged us and they kissed us and we held hands and we said a prayer and people shared. And the speaker that night was a lady named Mary. And Mary was an older woman and she had butterflies. She wore a red pantsuit. And she had butterflies pinned all over the pantsuit and butterfly earrings. And back in those days, the butterfly was a big symbol for Overeaters Anonymous. I don't see it quite as much today. But Mary was covered with butterflies, and she was so loving and so wonderful and kind. And she talked about the fact that this is a spiritual program. Now, I'm pretty much of an atheist. And when I heard her say, this is a program where you believe in God, I thought, gee, this is not for me. But she started to explain that it could be your idea of a higher power. It could be anything. It could be the love of the group. It could be a tree in the yard. It could be a doorknob. I remember laughing when she said it could be a doorknob. And I started to relax. And the people were so loving. And I felt my heart warming up to this lady, Mary, the speaker. And by the way, she turned out to be my very first sponsor, but she came from another town. It was just my good luck that she was there as a speaker in my first night. And everyone was so kind. And I realized in my response to this group, I was lonely. Even though I was in a wonderful marriage and three great children, deep down somewhere inside me was a loneliness, and it responded to the love in this group. And I enjoyed myself. I really loved this meeting. So this friend who asked me to come with her, she and I went out into her car. She was going to drive me home. And she said to me, well, what did you think of that meeting? And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, you'd never go back there again, would you? I said, well, I kind of liked it. And she said, you liked it? I said, yes, I did. And it's funny. Now, here we're in a church. She's the religious one. I'm the Jewish atheist. And I'm responding to the love in this group. I'm responding to something very deep, a fellowship. And that's what we have. We have a beautiful fellowship. We feel it even with the coronavirus. We feel it. We reach out for each other. I go to meetings in Australia and Italy and Ireland, and I love it. It doesn't matter who the people are or where they are. They're my people. They accept me. I accept them. We have such a love. And as it says in the big book, we're people who normally would not mix, but it doesn't matter. We share something so deep down. And it says in the big book, deep down inside each man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. And we feel that. We feel that even if we're an atheist, we feel that. And so this is what happened to me at my first meeting. And the lady who brought me was just stunned that I liked it so much. She almost acted embarrassed that she took me. And I said, oh, I like, she says, well, would you actually go back to one of these meetings? I said, yes. She was so surprised. She dropped me off at my house. We lived at that time in Batavia, Illinois, out in the deep woods, beautiful wooded area. She dropped me off in the driveway and I stood there in my driveway. She drove away and I looked up at the sky. I looked up at the sky. I'm standing there in the driveway and I look up at the trees and the sky. I'm outside my house and I look up and I see the stars. And I remembered looking up. It's my very first meeting. I look up and I think to myself, I wonder if there really could be something up there. I wonder. And so right then, my very first meeting, something was opening up inside me. Something was opening up spiritually to the possibility, not the certainty, but the possibility that there could be something more than just what you see in everyday life. There could be really be something. And you know what's funny? If you look in the big book, and I'm going to make references here and there to the big book because I truly feel the big book is my Bible. It guides me. It tells me how to live my life. And on page 46, there's something that the first time I read it, I thought, oh my goodness, this is, you know, there's so many coincidences in this program. Here it is. It talks about a starlit night, which is this such a powerful thing that happened to me on my very first meeting. And it says, I'm going to start by reading at the bottom of page 45. We know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. This is the chapter, we agnostics. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him with which someone had tried to impress them during childhood. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves was somewhat weak, even cowardly. We looked upon this world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, and inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. We looked askance at many individuals who claimed to be godly. How could a supreme being have anything to do with it all? And who could comprehend a supreme being anyhow? Yet, in other moments, we found ourselves thinking, when enchanted by a starlit night, who then made all this? There was a feeling of awe and wonder, but it was fleeting and soon lost. Well, when I read that, I thought, my goodness. I thought, of course, immediately back to my own starlit night experience, my very first night in OA. And I had a wonderful experience in OA in my young 30s. Then I went to law school and I kept in touch with my wonderful sponsor, Mary. She came to my law school graduation. But as the years passed, I didn't put the time in. And I think we all know that to really get something out of this program, you have to put in time, energy, commitment, taking all the actions every day. And I didn't do that. I went to law school, became a full-time lawyer. And as the years went by, the pounds came on and I tried various quick fixes like Optifast and various things. And the weight came back on. Finally, I was up to almost 300 pounds. I was up to 272 pounds and beyond. And you could see from my pictures, I was very heavy. And now I'm near 70 years old. And I can't believe that this is my situation. I knew OA was wonderful from my brief experience in my young 30s. And I was in a terrible situation health-wise. I was a full-time lawyer. I still am a full-time lawyer, even though I'm going to be 76 soon. But I was a full-time lawyer, but I had no clothes to wear. I was outgrowing every suit. I had a whole closet of black suits. And I tried to look different each day that people wouldn't think I'm wearing the same suit, which I was. And I would put pins on the collar of the suit. So I would think I'm fooling people that I have more than one suit. But it was terribly hard to try to look professional. And I'm basically a corporate lawyer. You have to look professional. And so I had all these black suits in every size. Nothing really fit me well. My bras were so tight, they were cut into my skin. And as I'm driving home from the office, I would try to unhook my bra. I was in such pain. And I buy bra after bra after bra, ring after ring, because the sizes, to give you an idea of sizes, at my heaviest, I was a size 10 ring. Right now, I'm a size 6. So that's a huge difference. I went in to have some of my rings resized, and the lady in the jewelry store said, "Do you know some of these rings are a size 10? I said, "Oh, yes, I know that." She looked at me like, "My God, where did you get these size 10 rings from?" But, you know, it's very hard to look professional when you're constantly gaining weight. And it's terrifying. Well, at my highest weight, before I came back to OA in April 2nd of 2015, before I came back, I was starting to bleed. Now, I've never heard anyone mention this as an OA speaker, but I'm going to tell you what, this is my story. It's a little gruesome, but this is what really happened. I'd be sitting at my desk and I'd have all kinds of documents spread out on my desk, nice white type documents. And I would look down, I feel something like on my, and I'd look down, bright red blood was all over these blobs of blood were falling out of my nose, dripping down onto the paper. And I was hoping it was sinuses, that my nose was dry, and I do tend to have, but this was pretty far gone to have bright red blood just dripping down. And I was scared to death. I should have gone to a doctor immediately because it could have been very serious, but I was scared. I was scared to go to the doctor. I was scared to go to the dentist. I had stopped taking care of myself. And I remember having a big roll of paper towels next to my chair by my desk. So if blood would come, I could mop it up before it hit the paper. And that's the terrible condition I was in. I remember trying to walk up the stairs. Our office, our law firm is up on the second floor, and there's no elevator. It's an older building, and you have to walk up the stairs. And I remember walking up the stairs going, and I couldn't control my breathing, walking up the stairs, trying to lug 272 pounds up these stairs and go. And when I got to the top of the stairs, I was so afraid somebody, another lawyer or one of the legal assistants would come up to me and I'd be that I would get to the top and I'd race into the ladies' room right next to the top of the stairs and go into a stall where the toilet was, so I could just get my breathing under control, because I was so humiliated to think somebody would say, "Why? What's wrong?" And I'd have to say, "I can't breathe because I just walked up the stairs." There's a lot of humiliation and shame with being that heavy. The other thing is I used to worry if a client, you know, in my kind of legal practice, sometimes you don't see somebody for maybe 8 years or 10 years until they need you with another problem. And I would wonder, what did I look like when this client last saw me? I was a little afraid. How heavy was it? Was I thin? Was I fat? Was I maintaining? I worried. That was that kind of feeling of humiliation. What did I look like? And that affected my social life, that I was afraid to see friends and go out. And I have a wonderful husband, but he understood. He's never made fun of me. He understands. As a matter of fact, he says, Nancy, being married to you is like being married to 10 different women, because he's seen me in every size and shape. And he said, I never needed to get a divorce. I had 10 wives, 10 different wives. And he always put up with me, whatever I looked like. He never made fun of me. He understood. But you look so different when you have that much weight that you're gaining and losing repeatedly. You forget what you look like when people saw you. Now, the topic of this talk is the beauty of recovery. And so what I want to do is talk to you a little bit about beauty. And it really does enter in like a theme. It enters in like a theme in my story, because until I recovered and I came back April 2nd of 2015, and I lost 105 pounds in OA, just eating moderately, doing the 12 steps, getting a sponsor. And I found having a spiritual program, even though, as I say, I'm pretty much of an atheist, I found by saying the prayers in the big book and getting the right attitude, getting dependent upon a higher power, whatever that higher power might be, I was able to say no to all the moods that I used to be a slave to. And it's really been a miraculous process going through the steps. At first, I had to just kind of like hold on tight and be starving and just be determined not to eat. That was in the beginning of the steps. That only can last for so long. After a while, as you get further along in the steps, I find, as it says in the big book, sanity has returned. And I'm able to more easily do that. And today, I have to say, it's a miracle that if I think of a certain food thought or I want to have more of something, I'm able to say, no, Nancy, you don't need that. You don't want it. That's poison, or that'll just torture you. Don't. And that sanity has worked now since April 2nd of 2015, due to the spiritual power of this program. And that's what the big book says. The big book says that lack of power is our dilemma. And going through the 12 steps in the big book with a sponsor, that will give you the power you need. I certainly can say from my own experience, it's given me. Now, the reason I talk about the beauty of recovery is since recovering in that process, I wear makeup. I wasn't wearing makeup before I recovered. I would go to work in the black suit with a different pin, no makeup. Now I wear makeup wherever I go. I just want to. I don't think I'm a beauty queen, but I like to look attractive. I like to try to look attractive. I have pride in the way I look. And I have a closet filled with clothes that are all the same size. They've been the same size for 5 years now. And I have the joy of being able to look around the closet and figure out, well, tonight's an example. I wanted to look nice knowing I'm a speaker. What blouse am I going to wear? Well, I have about 20 different blouses, all different colors and patterns, but they're all the same size. I didn't have to stand there the way I used to and think, what fits me? Because I used to have a big closet filled with clothes and hardly nothing fit me. I didn't worry about what I wanted to wear. I worried about what could possibly fit me. And now everything is the same size. I don't have fat pants and thin pants. I have everything fits me the same. It's really unbelievable. You know, now that it's becoming springtime here in Illinois where I live, I went to put a jacket on because it was just a light jacket the other day. And my husband looked at me in this jacket and he said, Nancy, He said, "You've had that for a few years now, haven't you?" I said, "Yes, I have. I'm so proud of that. I'm so proud that this jacket," I even bragged a little. And I said, "Walter, I think it's a little big on me," which was kind of funny because I've been the same size, the exact same weight now for 5 years. And for those of you who ask, well, as far as maintaining, people will ask me, well, do you have a certain weight? Well, I give myself a 5 pound range and I weigh myself frequently and I'm in that range. If I see it's a little bit higher, I might have a little less of something. It, to me, that's sanity. I want to stay in that 5 pound range. And as you get older, you can't eat quite as much. Your metabolism slows down and you need fewer calories. So again, I think of that as part of sanity has returned. And I have been the same weight now, as I say, for 5 years. And not only do I wear makeup and I have all the same size clothes, talking about the beauty of recovery now, but my nails, I used to be a severe nail biter. And I think part of my underlying compulsive overeating is anxiety. And I try to hide it, but I think deep down there's a lot of anxiety. I think many of us have that. And with me, it showed in my nails. Now, I was not a fat child, by the way. I was a normal sized child, but I was a nail biter. And I was a normal sized child, but I was a thumb sucker. And I think that those oral activities and the anxiety finally exploded when I was about 20, 21 years old into compulsive overeating. So that with me, it came a little later. I wasn't a fat child or a fat teenager, but a very compulsive overeater, volume eater, starting in my young 20s. But getting to my nails, so I always felt embarrassed that I had these bitten nails. And I went to a nail place. My daughter encouraged me. She says, "Mom, go and get these fake nails. You'll like it." So I went and I got these acrylic nails and I did like them very, very much. And this was a Vietnamese nail place. And I was just getting into the spiritual 12-step program and where it says in the big book that we don't want to be angry people, that the grouch and the brainstorm are not for us, that's dangerous for us to have this anger. And so there I am sitting in the nail place and the various ladies are all talking in Vietnamese. And I'm sitting in the chair getting a pedicure as well as a manicure. And they're talking in Vietnamese and I feel myself getting very angry and resentful. I feel like I'm the customer. They should be talking in English. They should be talking to me, not talking Vietnamese to each other. And I could feel the anger and the resentment building. And I thought to myself, Nancy, this is not good for you. Because I was very deeply into being abstinent at that point and going through the 12 steps. And I knew this wasn't good. But what do you do when you're angry like that? You're sitting in the chair and they're talking Vietnamese. What do you do? And I actually prayed. And it's funny, you'd say, well, how can you pray, Nancy? You're an atheist. Well, I have no problem using this program being an atheist. Maybe in my head, I'm an atheist, but in my heart, in my soul, I'm a believer. And I just kind of let that conflict ride and I don't worry about it because it really does help me. This program helps me in every area of my life. So there I am sitting in the nail place thinking, what do I do with this anger? What? And then I said, God, help me. And I got a thought, and this was the thought. And I don't know where it came from. It came out of the sky. Nancy, ask them to teach you a Vietnamese word, which was exactly the opposite of what I was feeling, which was how dare they talk in Vietnamese and I'm the English speaking customer. So I said, excuse me. She looks up, she's doing my feet, my toenails. I said, excuse me, can you tell me, how do you say thank you in Vietnamese? She looked so surprised. The whole place, all the other women, the whole, it was like the whole place stopped. And she said, "Come earn you. Come earn you." So I'm repeating, "Come earn you." And they're all kind of giggling because I'm not very good with languages. And so I kept practicing, "Come earn you." And I could feel all my anger going. And it just took care of it. And I even put in my phone under notes in my iPhone, the "Come earn you." I spelled it out so I could always remember it. And it gave me such a change of attitude, which is what this program, essentially deep down, that's what this program is. It's an attitude of depending on God. It handles our anxiety. It handles everything. And it worked. And then once COVID started, I thought, my goodness, what's going to happen to my nails? I'm self-isolating. Fortunately, with my job, I could be a lawyer full-time from home. And I stayed home for over a year, self-isolating, my husband and I. We had our food delivered, and we were really home. I mean, I didn't go anywhere. I thought, what's going to happen to my nails, my beautiful acrylic nails that I was so proud of? I'm going to have bitten fingernails again. Well, a miracle happened with that. My acrylic nails eventually, of course, fell off. And I just started doing my own nails. And I had no desire to bite my nails. That was a shocker. And I actually get compliments on my nail. I'm going to hold it up. If you can see, just normal nails, light pink polish, but they look nice. And I have emery boards all over the house. I find if I keep them very smooth and neat, that I have no desire to bite them. And so after a lifelong struggle of being humiliated with these terrible bitten nails, I now have normal, nice nails, and I do them myself. So that was one of the gifts of COVID, which I didn't expect. I was worried about that. And then as far as the beauty of the outer world, I've talked a little bit about the beauty of my own self-care with clothing and jewelry and makeup and everything else. We have a park across the street from our condo building, beautiful park. It's called the River Park. And there are flowers and trees and birds and everything you can think of. It's a beautiful park. All kinds of trees and bushes. I never set foot in there. In the years that I was into compulsive overeating, and I was a volume eater, I should tell you. I mean, I didn't eat just a little of something. I had buckets of it. I'd sit at night and watch TV and eat just buckets. You name the food and I ate buckets of it, huge bags of it. And so I didn't set foot in there. You'd say, well, Nancy, why wouldn't you go into a park right across the street from your condo building, right on the river there? Because I had no interest. It's a funny thing, but when I was into this compulsive overeating, the way I was eating, all I was interested in was getting home from work, getting my binge foods and watching TV and eating. I had no interest in the beauty of a park. I hardly saw the park. And well, one of the remarkable things that's happened to me, I'm just checking the time here. I think I'm still good. Yeah. One of the things that happened to me was I started walking, and we actually worked with a trainer, and the trainer we'd walk. Well, all of a sudden I found I was walking in the park, and not only walking in the park, but I was seeing things. I was seeing little flowers, and I would pull out my iPhone and take pictures of various flowers and send them to people, people in the program, people out of the program, took pictures of the river. There were cranes, there were ducks, there were all kinds of bushes. And I would even take pictures of the beautiful iron railings throughout the park. and some of the beautiful prairie grasses and how they would change with the seasons. This is the other thing. I would, because I would be in that park almost every day, I would notice a certain flower was opening and another flower was closing. And I began to see the way the seasons work. Now, I know this sounds kind of crazy. You'd think, Nancy, you're in your 70s and you're first noticing that the seasons come and go. But I really never paid attention to it before. I didn't notice the way the trees would, the little buds would open and the leaves will fall and the colors of the prairie grass, they would, the colors would change. And I would take pictures of all of this. And these became almost like friends to me. And I would wear headphones and I would listen to music. And sometimes I would listen to Vision for You. You were talking about Vision for You. I'm very devoted to that. It's a call-in meeting in the morning and they do a beautiful job of studying the big book. And I would listen, you know, it's recorded as well as live. And I'd listen to recordings. I'd listen to podcasts. I'd listen to music. And I would feel close to God in the park. And so when we talk about the beauty of recovery, that is, to me, I think of the park right away. Now, one day I was in the park, and while I was there, I noticed a song. And, you know, now when I hear certain lyrics and songs, they have a spiritual meaning to me that they didn't have before. And I think, gee, it's the same song, but all of a sudden I'm hearing things in the lyrics that that I never heard. And I'm just now checking the time. Let's see, it's good. I've got like 15 minutes. Okay, I'm gonna read to you lyrics from a song you may know. And I want you to picture me in the park with the music playing. And I don't know this song is coming, but when I hear it, I'm almost knocked over because the words were so spiritual to me. And I hope you'll get a kick out of hearing this. The song is called You've Got a Friend, and it's by Carole King. And I'm going to read the word. Now listen to these words and you'll hear why, I hope you'll hear why this had such an impact on me. When you're down and troubled, and you need some loving care, and nothing is going right, close your eyes and think of me, and soon I will be there to brighten up even your darkest night. You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you have to do is call and I'll be there. You've got a friend. If the sky above you grows dark and full of clouds and that old north wind begins to blow, keep your head together and call my name out loud. Soon you'll hear me knocking at your door. You just call out my name and you know wherever I am, I'll come running, yeah, to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you have to do is call and I'll be there. Yes, I will. To me, that song was so remarkable. Now, I've heard that song many times, but there I was in this beautiful park with flowers and birds and trees and grass and things I've never seen before. I sometimes think it's like being Rip Van Winkle, that you're asleep and then years later you wake up. And now I see the beauty of nature. And that's why I want to emphasize it, because of the title of your weekend is all about blooming and beauty. And my topic, when you asked me to pick a topic, I picked the beauty of recovery. That's been my experience, is I'm so much more sensitive to everything around me because I'm not zoned out on food. I used to be the person that came home from work and big bags of binge foods and put on some old pajamas, so glad to get off my clothes and watch TV and just eat and eat and eat and eat to push down feelings. And now I have the 12 steps and working with others and these beautiful meetings to help me deal with my feelings. I don't need to push them down with huge quantities of food. Instead, I'm using step 10 for my feelings, step 11 to be close to God, step 12 to work with others. And the beauty of the fellowship, the love that I felt at my very first meeting that went into this deep, lonely spot in my heart and in my soul, that enables me to not hurt myself with food, that I'm able to just eat moderately and not go to the foods that I know are to me like cocaine. And everybody has to find out for themselves, I think, what foods you can have and what foods you can't have. And to know that you don't need to hurt yourself with those foods. Now, another thing that I want to share with you tonight is a beautiful, I don't know what you'd call it. It's kind of a saying. It's a saying, it's a statement about deep down inside of us, there's a safe place. There's a safe place. And this goes back to Dr. Bob, that wonderful co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. And Dr. Bob on his desk, and it was in his house in Akron, Ohio, was on his desk, a plaque about humility. And I think this is one of the most beautiful spiritual things that has ever been written. And Dr. Bob thought enough of it that he put it on his desk. And, you know, we talk about the beauty of recovery. Some of the beauty of recovery is deep within us. These beautiful thoughts, these beautiful spiritual thoughts we all share in the program, that beauty within us is so precious. And I want to read to you about this plaque, which Dr. Bob had on his desk about humility. Humility is perpetual quietness of the heart. It is to have no trouble. It is never to be fretted or vexed, irritable or sore, to wonder at nothing that is done to me, to feel nothing done against me. It is to be at rest when nobody praises me and when I am blamed or despised. It is to have a blessed home in myself, where I can go in and shut the door and kneel to my Father in secret and be at peace, as in a deep sea of calmness when all around and about is seeming trouble. And so I wanted to share that because we talked about beauty of recovery. I think of that beautiful plaque. Now, what I want to share, I've got about 7 minutes left. And what I want to do in that time is just tell you how I use the big book, because the big book really is to me my Bible. And I think of the big book as a prayer book. And I want to just point out to, now you may know many of these, but I just want to point this out to kind of refresh your memory. There are so many prayers in the first 164 pages of the big book. There's so many. Just to give you examples, of course, there is the third step prayer. Now, the third step prayer is a beautiful prayer on page 63. And it starts out, God, I offer myself to thee. And it signals the third step in abandoning yourself to God. Other prayers in the big book, we get to the fear prayer. And the fear prayer is on page 68. And page 68 tells us what to do when we have fear. I mean, this book is remarkable. It tells us what to do about any aspect of our life. It's really incredible that in 164 pages, this great spiritual work could be written to guide us through anything that would happen in our lives. And in doing that, in following these instructions, the tremendous compulsion to eat in a destructive way is removed by your higher power. That's the promise of this program. It's been my experience. And I spent a whole adult lifetime up and down the scales, nothing working. This is the only thing that's ever worked for me. And these prayers help so much. On page 68 is a prayer where we say, God, direct my attention to what you would have me be. It's beautiful. These are simple prayers. The sick man's prayer in the top of page 67. When a person offends you, it tells you what to do when a person offends you. You say, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. Simple, simple, short, powerful prayers. Page 76 has the step 6 instructions and the step 7 prayer. My creator, I am now willing, you should have all of me. Beautiful prayers. Then we get up to the everyday life of steps 10 and 11. And of course, I'm skipping a lot of wonderful things just to give you a feeling of this. For the 10th step, there's a prayer in there. God, remove my defects. It's simple, but that's how we handle resentment, fear, selfishness, and dishonesty. We give it to God and we don't have to deal with it. It tells us about the nightly review on page 86. And we ask God's forgiveness. That's a prayer. Inquiring what corrective measures should be taken. It says when we get up in the morning, we ask God to direct our thinking, page 86. So it's a prayer. God, direct my thinking. The bottom of page 86, if we face indecision, we ask God for inspiration. That's a prayer. God, give me inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. And on pages 87 and 88 is the simplest prayer of all, where it says, thy will be done. Thy will be done. You're praying to God. God, you take over. So I pretty much hit the end of my time slot. And I was such a privilege being here talking to you, because in you letting me tell you all of this, as it says, Dr. Bob says at the end of Dr. Bob's Nightmare, and I'll end with this on page 181. This is the first story in the back of the book. Beautiful story, Dr. Bob's Nightmare. He talks about why he works with others. And that applies in my mind to doing a talk like this, where I'm hoping to help at least one person. And Dr. Bob says, why do we bother doing this? Why do we bother helping others? Well, it says the top of page 81, the four reasons. Number one, it is a sense of duty. Number two, it is a pleasure. And it has been a pleasure tonight doing this. Number three, because in so doing, I am paying my debt to the man, in my case, the woman who took time to pass it on to me. And number four, because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Thank you so much. That was a beautiful